Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How's it going?
It's going all right. I feel like it's been a little while.
Well, we didn't do last week because, Thanksgiving and stuff.
Yeah, that happens.
What's going on?
Holidays.
We're in full swing.
Indeed. Yes. It's almost December.
Oh, boy. Yeah. You know how it's almost December is I sent the Six Colors magazine out today.
Yeah, there you go.
You can't call it a November issue and send it in December, but this is 2 months in a row where I've sent it on the last day of the month, which is not great, but,
Things get in the way.
Well, it was Thanksgiving. I actually have in my massive to-do system that I have now that Mike Hurley made me use Todoist, I do have a thing that reminds me to remind you and Stephen Hackett to write things and reminds me about, like, all the different... like deadlines to hit to get it out by the end of the month. And that has been helpful, but the holiday in this case and my travel in the last case have made the last two kind of go up to the last day. But we'll get back on track. Of course, we're going to have another month in December where maybe we'll get that one out early. Maybe that'll be a nice little
year-ender.
Little Boxing Day kind of something in there. We'll get it out toward the end of the month. But lots of stuff. So surprising stuff, right? Like we had the Apple security panic that happened this week. That was exciting.
The root of all evil, as it were.
Yeah, if you're running High Sierra anyway. It's funny. I am running High Sierra on my iMac. I'm also running it on my MacBook Air. And so I was able to use that as a... because this is the... you know, I'm running a beta. And the beta was, I guess, affected. But I had a hard time reproducing it on my iMac for whatever reason. Maybe I had maybe I already had a root password enabled and set or whatever. But on my MacBook Air, I did it. And it was like, yep, that's it.
Yeah, I tested both my iMac and MacBook Air. And they were both affected. But not my Mac Mini, because my Mac Mini is still on Sierra.
Yeah, it's one of these things that obviously, you know, a lot of times the story is not the story that gets reported, but it's the story that went unreported, which is, you know, was this known? It was obviously known a couple weeks before because somebody posted about
it, right,
on Apple's discussion forums, but nobody really noticed that, except that this guy noticed that and then tweeted about it. And that's how everybody found it, is that he saw that post and then he posted about it and then it went everywhere. You know, a lot of these security holes, though, the issue is that somebody, you know, security researcher somewhere or somebody in the dark web, scariest part of the web is the dark part where there's no light because the spiders don't want light to be anyway, that they know about these holes and they're not public because then they can exploit them, whether you're the NSA or you're some, some hacker somewhere. And then there's this bright shining moment where everything is like, oh, now we know, and here's an update, and it might turn off file sharing, but then you can do this to turn it back on. But they got it out fast. Apple got it out there and pushed it out to everybody. And if you're running High Sierra 10.13.1 anyway, it, like, if you didn't install it, it just installed it for you. Like, seriously,
right.
You got it. There's a second time they've done that.
Yeah. I mean, they should, right? For obvious reasons, because this is it is a serious vulnerability, even if it's one that was less likely to be exploited. But it is serious, and it's in the way that it affects things. And trying to explain the workaround to somebody with less technically savvy, like, I didn't tell my mom to update her computer
to open up directory utility and enable root and give it a password and all that. No.
Especially because Apple's like, we're going to push out a fix. It's like, that'll be fine. No one's going to hack their computer in the 24 hours it took them to do that.
So now I feel like the only other danger that remains is this post-update danger, where you're going to have some system out there that's running 10.13.0, hasn't updated to 10.13.1, so didn't get the auto update, because 10.13.0 apparently didn't get it. And those are still vulnerable. So there is that. I feel like it's a small window, but that's always the other part of this, right? Is it's not like, oh, Microsoft finds a vulnerability and they fix it and yay, everybody's got it. It's the PCs that didn't install the fix that are still running old software and are kind of just laying out there with people don't even know that this is going on. They're the ones that are in the greatest danger. Now, it sounds like this is only something that happens locally. I don't think I saw that this affects...
I was talking a bit to our friend Adam Angst about this, and he said that in some cases, and I think Dan Frakes, our former colleague, chimed in on this as well, that in some cases you could screen share into a remote computer.
Oh, with a root.
With a root login, even with no password.
You have to have that turned on, right?
So
that,
yeah, that's you'd have to have screen sharing on, and you'd have to know what the... You'd have to know the computer, right? Or be like looking for computers, essentially, in which this works. So it's, again... In cases where somebody is being targeted for a specific reason, definitely more dangerous than if you are someone who is probably not a very high profile person, right? Like if somebody's already looking to hack you because of your position or who you are, etc., then this is definitely more worrying than if you're just, you know, Joe average computer user, because people probably aren't looking to do this. The biggest concern really in these cases would be like malware, right? Like stuff that you downloaded that would essentially give itself root access because there's no password. I think that would be the scariest thing for the average user, is the possibility of being exposed to that. Then again, there are, you know, protections against that, assuming that you're practicing good computer hygiene for the most part. So is this likely to be a widespread issue? Probably not. But as you said, there's always going to be some small chunk of users or machines that don't get the necessary updates.
Yeah. I think Apple's done all that they could here. And it seems like the nature of this, it's not going to be a huge issue, because it's like, seriously, like people who upgraded to High Sierra but then didn't update to this next one, everything else is patched now. So, and it's, you know, limited to these, you know, systems that you have physical access to, or that were not being updated but were still, like, somebody was savvy enough to turn on screen sharing. I mean, like, the it seems like a pretty narrow thing, but the point is that that is still going to be an ongoing concern, right? Is making sure.
And there is the bigger issue too of, you know, how do these bugs get through? And bugs always get through, right? Like, this is not to say that anybody is 100% secure, because the nature of machines, that's just the way it is. But it's not an insubstantial, you know, problem, and it was clearly one that was introduced in High Sierra. Somebody must have done something to, for whatever reason, in testing or in working on developing some sort of features, somebody must have changed something. And the fact that that was not QA'd and caught is a little disturbing, because it makes you wonder what else is out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that for me, though, this is complex software, and it can be as simple as, in this case, quite literally, unless somebody is typing in root with no password and clicking OK a couple of times, you will never find it. Like, you would have to know what it is to find it.
Right.
Now, the question is, is there code review? What change got made here?
Right. And that's
that
the question.
Caused this.
You're talking about a change that is clearly related to a, you know, the security and authentication.
It's the authentication system of Mac OS has a hole in it somewhere.
Which is critical.
Right?
And at that point, the question is, what were you changing in the authentication system that made this happen?
And does that, what scrutiny needs to be put on that that perhaps was not put on that?
And I agree with you that these are complex issues, as evidenced by the fact that installing the patch borks file sharing.
Yeah.
Because all these things, it's like the old thing with, like, you know, we've got too many rabbits, we'll use the snakes to clear out the rabbits. Mm-hmm. Oh no, now we have too many snakes. Send in the coyotes or whatever. And and, you know, the question is just keep cascading until, like, I'm sure there will be a comprehensive point release at some point that just, you know, does a something faster than a 24-hour patch job. But it is still, you know, and there are, over the past several years, we've had numerous discussions and numerous stories about the, you know, the cracks showing, essentially, right? And certainly in a larger pattern-based sense, software is complex, and there's no, you know, that doesn't necessarily give you a pass, but it is an explanation for why these things do sometimes break. But, you know, I think there are people who are curious about why these bugs seem to persist, or other, you know, other small bugs that are annoying for people seem to persist across multiple updates. Is it because we're not paying attention, or just prioritizing other things? I mean, there are questions about that.
Let me tell you. Okay, so I'm gonna it is absolutely the case that anytime anything like this happens, you will immediately see everybody who has an axe to grind use this as the example about why it's happening. I saw our friend and former colleague Rob Griffiths tweet that Apple was too busy adding emoji to the touch bar to fix their security problem in High Sierra. And it's like, those things have nothing to right. do with each other. I'm sure the people working on the emoji touch bar software that preceded High Sierra, by the way, that came out earlier than that. I'm pretty sure they're not the people who made the code change that caused this to happen and are probably not on the authentication and security team for macOS. Probably not. And yet, even that extreme example and some ones that are a little more narrow where it's like, if you think there's a problem at Apple and then Apple does something wrong, you will point at it and say, see, even if it has nothing to do with it. And I'll just say, sure. like, are the cracks starting to show? Well, yeah, that's why the cracks showed in Snow Leopard when you plugged in a FireWire drive and it erased your data, right?
Not
the cracks
to say
were
the
showing
same.
In 2009.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to say that there's anything new about this. I mean, I guess people are asking about, like, I don't know. To me, it's just a question of, like, it's the eternal struggle. You want your devices to work seamlessly. You want them to work well. But people also demand new features and additional stuff, you know, that people want to get sold on these new versions of software, right? Like, and Apple wants... they want to promote features that are going to convince people to get the new versions of software. They mm-hmm. want to make them do new things, right? And so there is always, I think, a little bit of push and pull about how much time do you spend working on new things and how much time do you spend sort of doing the stuff that's not sexy, like the maintenance and bug fixing, but that is important to people's lives. And I think that probably, you know, they work on trying to do as much of those things as they can. But I think there is, to a certain extent, there will be a scarcity of resources because you only have so many people to deploy
exactly
many places.
Right. And people want... new features, right?
Right.
Everybody clamors for new features. We always are like, oh, they should do this, they should do that. Very, very rarely do you have it where it's like, hey, here's an update. It doesn't do anything except fix bugs and all that. It's like, people, oh, why should I even bother, right? It's the problem here is that we are our own worst enemies as mm-hmm. users because,
yes.
and I know there's somebody out there and I was like, no, I'm not like that. And it's like, you know what? If you aren't like that, you are the only one because everybody wants new features and they want them now. And if you said, you know what? No software is going to have new features for 5 years and all we're going to do is look for bugs. People would scream bloody murder. People scream bloody murder about High Sierra for not having enough features in it, right?
Right. Sure.
The only thing that can save us, Dan, and you this may surprise you, the only thing that can save us is emoji. Because emoji is a thing that requires almost nothing in terms of code changes, but
right.
drives adoption of new versions of software.
Mm.
Also, auto-updating really helps. Like, auto-updating the dot releases of iOS is very helpful, and they've tried to push that on macOS. It'll actually download the full installer of the next version. Like, we might enter a world here where the only motivation people have to update their software is emoji, new emoji, and that's enough. And then maybe the features can back off a little bit, but the problem is they still need to do features to market new pieces of hardware. And that's just sort of where we are. And you know, I think the reason that the software builders do it is because they know that that's how people respond. And
sure.
so you end up prioritizing new features over fixing bugs.
And,
yeah.
And I think that part of it is also that Apple's not unique in this regard, but they are perhaps it is one of their defining characteristics, and it has been in the past, that they are they don't respond to a lot of things, right? They tend to be fairly tight-lipped about questions, right? Like, the secrecy has been a big part of the culture,
sure.
and they sort of play everything close to the vest. So there is a lot of feeling from people who do report bugs, right? Like, we've heard, you and I both know lots of people who report radars that get, you know, filed as, oh, no, that's not getting fixed, right? Or like, radar
that's marked
list.
As marked as a duplicate.
Exactly,
and
right?
What
like
happens?
There are thousands of duplicates of this bug that never get fixed. And so
yep.
I understand people, especially in the developer and, like, sort of tech nerd, like, community, who feel like, I'm shouting into the void when I'm trying to do a good work about reporting bugs, but they just never get fixed. And I think that certainly amplifies that feeling of like, oh, they're just prioritizing new features instead of, you know, fixing this bug that I've reported. And that's frustrating. I totally get it. I've definitely run into any number of bizarre bugs that I was like, I don't even know where to start with this, like, you know, in terms of it. And maybe I'm the only person and I'm an edge case some reason.
That's what I was going to say, is some bugs. The problem with the opacity of radar is some bugs are big and need to be fixed. And we don't know whether Apple understands that they need to be fixed. Although that's why they always say file radars, because even if they get marked as dupes, the number of duplicates of a bug helps get it some attention. Right. And if people write about it gets it some attention. But my point is, though, some bugs are the most important thing in the world to you, and nobody else cares. And that's why they don't get fixed.
And you can't tell either. That's the other thing.
You can't tell.
Like, you can't tell. Not only can you not tell that, but you can't tell. You may be experiencing a bug and you're like, oh, it's just this one little thing. And it might turn out that that's like, you know, pulling out the root system where it's like, oh my God, there's actually so much stuff connected to this that that's why it's so complex and hard to fix. But you just don't know because it's all abstracted so far away.
No idea.
And the other part of that is that if you are in this tech nerd community or developer community, you have a facility to report things via radar. But again, if you're average Joe user who's just like, this is not behaving the way I expected to, you probably don't even know that radar exists or even know how to address that problem. And you just get frustrated, which I can also understand.
And crashes can get reported with Crash Reporter, but like weird UI problems where it's like, why won't it let me select this thing? There's no way to report that.
It's like,
I mean,
right now,
short of filing a radar or using the feedback assistant app that's in the betas.
Super weird thing that happened this morning is, and I actually have this, you know, when you're on the iOS and you pull down Control Center and you force press on the home icon and it brings up all your devices. And, you know, they have like...
That's called a 3D touch, Dan. 3D touch.
Yep. Whatever. Yeah. I use the force.
All right, that's right.
But so there's
it's
an
not
animation
the phrase you're looking for.
there's an animation where when you 3D touch on something, it expands the sort of the button on like your device, right? Like sort of starts to zoom as it pops. And like right now in my list of devices, there's one item that is like expanded permanent, like stuck in the expanded position, and it's just like, why? I don't know. I don't know how to fix this. It won't go away. It works fine, but it looks weird. It's like all those little things where you're like, yeah, this is a bug. Maybe I probably restart my phone. It goes away. And I maybe never see it again. But it is one of those things where I can, you know, there are lots of little bugs flying around that are of varying degrees of importance, right? Like that is not a bug that's actually going to stop me from doing anything, but it is one that makes me scratch my head and go, what? Whereas on the other end of the spectrum, I think about like the autocorrect bugs that have been going around, which to me are,
oh my God,
insane. And I feel that I don't know about your experience, but my experience over the recent last couple years, especially, have been that autocorrect or whatever the sort of text handling is weirdly inconsistent. I don't know why, but it's like I try to type things regularly that just end up garbled, either because it seems like it's not figuring out, oh, you meant to type this word, or I have actively seen it correct like things that were right into things that are wrong.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
I've seen words that are correct and common.
Yes.
Corrected to words that are wrong and totally uncommon.
Yes.
And also, I've also lately had a spate of random autocorrect capitalizations.
Yes. Yep.
Where I've got a normal word, it's literally not anything that could ever be capitalized except at the beginning of a sentence. It's not also a proper name or anything like that. And I'll be typing and it's just like, boop, it's going to be capitalized now. It's like, why are you doing that? And like, I don't want to turn off autocorrect because I got pretty good at, you know, getting speed and being close enough that it would guess it. But the guessing now, whatever they're doing, and I assume it's this differential privacy, machine learning, they're trying
to
gain...
the machine learning gone berserk, essentially.
Right, from everybody who's ever inputting it and all that. But it's like, this should be better, right? Like, yep. You should know, if you're going to do this, what you want is the output is, oh, this, given the context here, this is the most likely word you meant, and you just misspelled it, or you typed a real word, I'm going to leave it alone. And instead it's like, whoa, that common word, I'm going to replace it with a totally bizarre, uncommon word that you probably meant. I didn't mean that word. That's like, I had this, I think, I don't know if it's still doing this. For a while, I had this thing where I was typing, what was it? I, maybe? Or maybe it was a double space or something. And it kept, it kept auto-correcting to a single letter, to like R or something. Like, oh, the word you meant to type was R. And I thought, R is not a word. It is a letter.
Word in some tech speak, but yeah, it's not.
Why would you think I was typing a single consonant when I probably was typing the word right next to it? And it's just like, it was S. That's what it was. That was S. I would try, I am going to see a movie, and it would say, oh, do you mean S movie? No, I don't mean S movie. What is that? But it was stuck in its head, and I reset my autocorrect dictionary, and I haven't seen that in a little while, but for a while I could not escape S instead of A as a word, which is bizarre.
It's been this weird curve with typing, right? Because when the iPhone first came out, it took some time to get used to typing, thumb typing on a screen. And I feel like people struggled, and there was some, you know, some mocking, gentle mocking of it in the same way that people used to make fun of, like, the Newton's handwriting recognition. But it got a lot better, and people, like, it became a thing that was just commonplace, and everybody was used to doing it, right? We had the era of damn you autocorrect, things would just get changed to hilarious things. But yeah, we got over it. But it's like it hit a curve, and then for some reason, we started going back down the roller coaster. And I find it perplexing, and there's other weird things that have happened with typing. I'm sorry, do you mean E? But like, for example, one of the things I remember this very vividly, at some point very early on, they talked about sort of the predictive nature of the keyboard, where based on what you had already typed, it would enlarge tap targets for other letters that would be more common. And I feel like at some point for me, that also went off the rails.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if it was just me with my big thumbs or whatever, it's but like I would try to hit, I was like, no,
why
this
can't
letter,
I type anymore?
This letter.
Yeah. Oh no, I've experienced that too. And that's the problem when it goes off the rails, if it's doing things like changing how it senses your input based on what it thinks you're going to type, but what it thinks you're going to type is crazy, then you're like, how can I type the right thing? And I've definitely had that. It's been a roller coaster, like you said, but I have those moments where I feel like for a week or two, I'm like, man, I just can't type on my iPhone. And I don't think it's me. I think the software is doing it wrong, and that's really disturbing. That's like machine learning when it learns bad things,
right? Well, this is, you know, and if you read this month's magazine, that's kind of what I was going for. Is I feel like the problem with the way machine learning works, and I had a friend of mine who, when I was in college, who was working on like neural networks and stuff, and you know, the way these things work is using pattern recognition and building algorithms based on information that they get. But there's something weird about, like, when it gets that bad information and it just kind of doubles down on it and it's like, oh yeah, all these people typing this wrong thing must be correct. And for some reason, its algorithm, because the algorithm is really only a simulacrum of intelligence rather than actual intelligence. Language is very hard, right? Like, psychologists and linguists have spent a long time trying to figure out how people do language, because it is a weird concept fundamentally. And it's one that we have not been able to reproduce in machines super effectively, because it's understood up to a point, but at a point it's also just sort of like, oh yeah, I don't know, it gets really down into the weeds there.
Yeah.
Like a lot of things. So I do feel like this machine learning has a lot of promise, but it still needs to be sort of reined in a bit. And God help me, this is why I never want to be... This is why self-driving cars scare the crap out of me, because it's just going to get a bad idea in its head. It's going to be like, yeah, I can go down this road with no bridge, no problem.
Yep. What I want is to believe that this is the uncanny valley, and that we will get over it into a place where it's smooth again. I get the sense that sometimes this just happens with these learning technologies, is you they start off and you're like, all right, this is going okay. And then they're like, whoa, this is garbage. And then they kind of like come out of it. I don't know whether that, how much of that is the algorithm and how much of that is the people tweaking the algorithm, right. But that's my hope, is that we'll come out on the other side and it will be way better, because the promise here is great. It's just the reality is not so great. And I do worry though, that it gets stuck in ruts. Like you were saying about self-driving cars, like one self-driving car accidentally goes off like down a hillside, and then all the other, and was like, hey, that wasn't so bad. And then all the other cars start doing it. And then the next car comes by and was like, oh, it looks like there's a path down there, and this other car went down there, so it must be a new street I'm not aware of. And all of a sudden, everybody is going down a hillside, and it's a street now because the cars decided it was.
That's a weird form of desire paths.
It's car desire paths.
Well,
yeah.
It's funny too, because with typing. People are much more either willing or just, oh man, Alexa, speaking of computer learning, Alexa is just reading a definition right now. I don't know why.
Oh, my Echo read a poem the other night, and we're like, what is happening? We were watching TV and talking, and all of a sudden we hear coming across the room, I thought I never should see a poem as lovely as a tree. I don't know, remember what the poem actually was. But it was like, we listened and it was like, it was verse. We're like, what is going, and she announced it. Like, this is the title by so-and-so, and then just bop, 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 bop. What did we say? And I didn't, you know what I should have done is open the app, right? Because the app will tell you.
It'll tell you.
This is what the stupid box thought you said.
Amazon just pushed out a poem to all of its Echo devices.
Yeah, right. But these people seem sad. Let's give them a poem.
The typing thing, like I said, people just kind of like throw up their hands and are like, yeah, okay, whatever. But there's a lot of other cases where if you looked at this, it would be much more obvious, right? Like, so Apple gave out that there was a demo app they had after WWDC that was like machine learning vision stuff, where you would point it at something and it would tell you what that is.
Right.
Right. And if you got machine learning to the point where you pointed it at, you know, a banana, and it told you that it was a, I don't know, a car, like, everyone would be like, no, this is dumb. Like clearly this doesn't work.
Right.
Right. And people would just stop using it. But you can't stop using your keyboard.
Yeah. And if your neighbor happens to have a car shaped like a banana,
then you're
ruining it for everyone.
That's what I want to be. I want to be the guy who just griefs machine learning algorithms.
I think there's that job probably exists somewhere.
It's probably low paid.
Well, I don't know. That might be a high paying job inside Apple and Google to try and break their machine learning. I don't know. The promise of machine learning is great, but it is on another level. Like, yeah, we can't figure this stuff out. Let's just have the computers do it. It's like we're not going to even bother to program this. Let's just have the machines. I get it. I get the principle. You have so much data. You can find the patterns and all of that, but I don't know.
The patterns are bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what we need? I'm going to bring it all the way back around, Dan. Once the machine learning can do all the QA on software and can fix all the bugs.
Interesting,
right? Because you do machine learning on software. I bet there is already machine learning driven QA systems that sit there and like tap on screens and click mice and things like that all the time, just trying to learn about like how to use a computer. And they probably learn to like log into the internet and start posting comments on articles or something like that.
What have we done? It's how the world ends, not with a bang, but with a click.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, it's my cautionary tale here is this isn't the first time that this kind of bug has happened. Apple does have, fortunately, a system to get hot fix security patches out, which is good. Like, they didn't make everybody go download a file somewhere and install it and reboot or anything. It's just like it was going to happen in the background. That's a good sign. Everybody will use it as an example of what's wrong with Apple because they have other axes to grind. But yeah, it's, and I would also say software quality has been an issue. I think it's an issue with anybody who's got a big complex operating system. It's an issue. It's definitely an issue with Apple. For me, and this goes back to something they were talking about in ATP last week, which, you know, ATP goes through its cycles where it's a downer and then it's less of a downer. That's one of the reasons that I wrote that thing that's in the Six Colors magazine that's in everybody's inboxes right now, which is me trying to be positive and like look at the big picture here. But I will say something that really resonated and it's something that frustrates me about Apple is, Apple does not have enough people working on software. Like, they don't. They don't. And I get that they task people with different projects, and they move people on and off of teams. And their argument is, why would you ever keep somebody on the calculator app? Because you need them in other places, and you'll lose them if they're a talented person, and all they're ever allowed to do is the calculator app. Although
math
I have this thought,
hasn't changed that much.
Well, yeah. Although I have this thought that, but if you have one person and they're a good developer and you put them on the calculator app, that's James Thompson.
Right.
And he's made almost his entire living for more than a decade at building a calculator, building pCalc for Mac and iOS. And I thought about that, and I think this is one of the places where I think Apple falls down. And maybe it's because Apple wants everybody in-house or in one of their various offices, whereas James is, you know, in his flat in Glasgow. But I do believe that one of the great problems that Apple has is they have a lot of software that is not actively developed or does not have a champion, like a leader who believes in it and wants to take care of it. So you end up having this software that gets kind of abandoned or forgotten. Not all of Apple software is like that. Like Logic and Final Cut have teams on them and they are cranking out. If you've never looked at the change notes for Logic, oh my God, that there is a team in, I want to say Germany. They originated in Germany, but they're like dot releases of Logic all through the year. And they keep making updates. Final Cut keeps getting updated, but the pace of, I feel like the iWork stuff is actually updated now way more. There was a period where it was really fallow, and I know they've got different teams in different places. I think a lot of them are in Pittsburgh, actually, which is, I think, not widely known, but they're geographically distributed at least a little bit. And those I see releases from. Things like iMovie and GarageBand, maybe a little bit less. I'm not quite clear what's going on there. And then there's the stuff that's in the system. So I guess my gut feeling is that Apple could and probably should keep on hiring developers. And if they need to change, maybe they've already made these changes because I've just given some counter examples. Changing so like not everybody needs to be in Cupertino. Not everybody even needs to be in an office. But if, you know, Apple is a very large company that has all of the software that's out there. They have no excuse to abandon software that only they are allowed to update. Mm-hmm. So if that meant, again, James is not going to take this job, but if that meant the equivalent of James Thompson working on calculator and another couple of apps on iOS or macOS, and that's their entire job, and they've got to, and that's all they need to do, I think it's kind of worth it for them to do that and find somebody, even if that person is just kind of off on their own somewhere in the world. If you pay them well enough and they care about the product, that's my gut, and again, I know it's really complex, and that if there are people at Apple listening to this, they're like, oh boy, that's not how it works, but the net result is that a lot of Apple's software, not just the OS, but like the apps, a lot of it does feel like it's abandoned, like it's updated once and then set aside for a year. Yeah. And it shouldn't be.
I think part of that is, you definitely look into company, you put Google up just as a comparison for a second, and I think it becomes very clear immediately. Google has all these different teams that work on different products, and they all, or at least a lot of them, have their own little blog or whatever, right? Like, it's very clear that there are teams there and working on it on different products. It's less clear, like, we know that with Apple, but it's not like any of the teams have outlets in which to communicate with people. And that's also a nature of the company being sort of a monolithic, closed mouth company about some things. They've started opening up, like, we have that whole machine learning, speaking of which, they have like a machine learning blog, and like they have shown that they are maybe willing to move in that direction a little bit, but there isn't a lot of interface between these teams. They're kind of faceless, little sub organizations, and that's why, even if there are people toiling away on that, because you don't see it, it kind of feels like, oh yeah, nobody's really working on this. And stuff is, I think the most important thing to remember is stuff is inestimably more complicated than it was 10 or 20 years ago.
Totally
like,
true.
These systems are hugely complex, and they're only getting more complex. And to a certain degree, more things are going to slip through because you can only scale your personnel as fast as like scaling that takes a lot less work, I feel like, than scaling sort of the scope of these software things. It just seems to me like it's hard to keep up with it because these features get more complex and these systems get more complicated. It's really hard to keep tabs on everything. It just becomes a problem of scale at a certain point.
Yeah, this is slightly tangential, but you know, if we talk about those of us who've been following Apple for a while now, we'll talk about Sherlocking every now and then, which is a famous story about an app called Sherlock that was introduced and it basically ate an app called Watson, I want to say.
And boy, were they not subtle about that.
And they were, yeah, right. And it duplicated the functionality. And this is actually one of my problems is if you're the OS vendor like Apple, you have a choice, which is it fundamental to your operating system to have this product, to this app as a part of your, either as an add-on or bundled with a system, or is it not? And I'm going to go back to the calculator again, right? Which is, for years, Apple just bundled pCalc with the operating system on many Macs, on many like Performas and stuff, because they didn't have a calculator and they just paid James per copy to put pCalc on, which was basically saying, we don't want to build a calculator. Here's a good Mac calculator. You get it when you buy the computer. Everybody wins. And then at some point they said, no, we need to write a calculator. It's like, all right, fair enough. So James, you know, the spigot turns off for James. It's fine. And they write a basic calculator. And then over the years, what's happened is they've added some features to the calculator that kind of make it compete more with pCalc. They've added scientific notation and all sorts of other stuff in there. And the same on iOS. And this is my question, which is, how, as the operating system vendor, as the hardware vendor, you need to be responsible and make a responsible choice about what you're doing with a feature like that. Because the problem is, if you get in a situation where you put enough effort into it that it makes the business of third-party calculators irrelevant, but not enough effort in it for it to be good. That's right. Where I think you don't want to go. Like, you either need to be good, like literally so good that everybody will use it and be happy with it, and there won't be a third party opportunity at all, which probably requires hiring somebody like James full time to spend on the calculator. Or you don't half ass it. You just do a basic calculator and everybody else is going to go into the Mac App Store and find a calculator because it's a basic calculator. The danger is when you get in that middle where it's like, they're kind of putting all the other competitors out of business, but they're also not doing a good job. Like, make right. your software good. It can be simple good or it can be complex good. But it's this middle where it's like, well, it's really ambitious, but it's not really very good. And it's bundled with every copy of the operating system. Well, and that's, they do that too much.
And for years, that was a frustration of iTunes, for example. It was like, yeah, there's no reason to ever have another music playing app, basically. Is iTunes great?
No. But I use it every day because it's the one that exists.
And it's fine, too, right? Like, it's fine, but it's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, and then the OS, of course, OS engineering is even more opaque and it's more difficult and it's even more complex at Apple because they have two different operating systems that share a lot of code, but also have things that are very different about them. And, you know, we've been going on a while, but hey, we weren't here last week, so you know, it's a bonus episode. I wanted to ask you this question because I've been turning it over. I've seen Steve Trouton Smith mention it a lot. It came up again last week. I've been thinking about it a lot. I don't think I know what to think, but I'm curious what you think about it, which is, we talk about these operating systems, macOS, iOS, where are they going? What are they doing on the Mac side? What are they doing on iOS? They share a lot, but there are also things that are really different about them. And what Steve Trouton Smith, who has dug up many secret things by digging in the code and firmware updates and things like that, what he said is he thinks that just as Google is working on this thing called Fuchsia, which is like, they haven't said anything about what exactly it is, but it looks an awful lot like a replacement for Android mm-hmm. as an operating system mm-hmm. and presumably for Chrome as well. It's like their next generation operating system, and they're doing it in the open because Google. What do you think about the future of operating systems at Apple? Because Steve's argument is that the best thing for Apple to do is probably to be working on, in the background where we don't even see it, because Apple, a next-generation operating system that is neither iOS or macOS, but is something new that's kind of like iOS and macOS, is flexible enough to be on laptops and desktops and phones, but is not iOS or macOS, versus maintenance mode for macOS and just keep evolving iOS. What do you think? What do you think they're doing?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I had not given a lot of thought out, but it really... So, I mean, the thing that throws that into relief for me is when you consider that... So, Mac OS X, as we know it now, came out 2001.
Yeah.
So it's 16, coming up on 17 years old.
OS X has had as much of a life as original Mac OS did when it was replaced.
That's exactly where I'm going with this. It seems clear, and we all knew for years, that classic Mac OS had a bunch of shortcomings. They tried a whole ton of times to come up with their next-gen OS.
They did.
And many of those projects got scrapped, and obviously they eventually built it on top of Next, which they acquired. So it seems silly to think that they wouldn't be working on some eventual successor. Now, the revolution in portable, you know, smartphones and tablets is one of those things that was it... I don't think anybody expected it to be as huge as it is. I think everybody expected it to be big, but I think it blew past even the biggest expectations. And so in some ways, it feels like maybe that, if not derailed, like switched to another track. And so, you know, I think there was some adjustment that has come with that. And we saw it in the fact that the first several releases of iOS were missing key things. And since then, they've revised it a whole bunch. And obviously, it's become an incredibly modern operating system. But I think the big question, and you wrote about this a little bit in those iOS laptop pieces that you did over the last couple weeks at Macworld. The big question is, does iOS keep evolving into something that is more Mac OS-like? Or
right.
Not.
This is the question, and I have been thinking of it because it's my last two Macworld columns, and like 4 or 5 months ago, I wrote a column about this too. That's the core question: is does Apple think the way to 10 years from now is evolving iOS and just continue evolving iOS and making it more Mac-like in some ways, or at least optionally more Mac-like? Because we've seen already that some features just have split between the phone and the iPad because they're different devices and they need some different features. So you could continue down that path to the point where you could totally make an iOS desktop or laptop, because at that point, iOS has features that it doesn't currently have.
Right.
Or do you say, all right, we have OS X or Mac OS now, and we have iOS, which was based on the foundations of OS X, and then we made some changes in order to ship the iPhone. What we really need to do is not evolve iOS, but take the best pieces from iOS and Mac OS and build a whole new thing that is neither. Maybe it can run iOS apps in a compatibility layer. Maybe it can run Mac OS apps in a compatibility layer. But it's really meant to be like super next gen. We're not going to even call it iOS. It's going to be something different. For me, that's the question. Is like, is iOS the future of computing at Apple? And then, I mean, Mac OS, I feel like, is just going to kind of continue being the Mac for as long as there are people who will buy the Mac, and they'll do. But I don't think they're going to invest in completely reimagining the Mac. I think the best hope for people who want desktop experiences from Apple 10 or 15 years from now is that they do build either evolve iOS, or they build a brand new thing that's capable of running on a desktop or on a phone.
But which one is it? My inclination is, here's my inclination, and this is based less on the technology than on just being sort of an observer and a student of how these kind of things work. I know in my, brief experience, my brief life as a developer, that there is nothing quite so satisfying as getting, you get halfway into a project and you're like, this is good. But if I were to start this project anew today with everything that I have learned by getting halfway through this project, I would do things totally differently.
Right.
And I think the temptation to burn everything to the ground and start fresh is powerful. And I think there are a lot of people in that industry, and you can see this by nature of the fact that people start startups and try to disruptive, existing technologies. I think, and the idea that you want to, essentially, if you're really doing the best thing, you're trying to disrupt the way you're doing it. And so, based on everything that's been garnered from the last, two-ish decades of Mac OS and the, last decade of iOS, I would be shocked if there were not a team in Apple somewhere working on that next generation OS. And I don't think it's anything that we would be likely to see. Even as macOS is coming to the age of classic macOS, I don't think it's anything that's likely to show up soon. But
no, that would be that we're talking about,
5, 10 years out, at least.
In my Macworld column, I referred to it as Apple OS 2020, but that's like Copeland 2010. It's probably later than that. But yeah, I think if I had to bet, I think I would bet on something new and not iOS in the long run. And I change day to day. But the reasoning is exactly what you said, which is, I think perhaps to use all the lessons learned on both platforms, even if it's mostly iOS with, you know, as a basis, but it's like learn about these two platforms and then build something. Because what you really want if you're Apple is you want one platform going forward that is flexible enough to be on all of these different devices.
And that's
but
it's
not
thing.
One is not two OSs. And it's not what Microsoft has done, which is basically like add iOS essentially on top of Mac top of Mac OS, which is what they've done with Windows. This is like, okay, we built iOS, so they've got a lot of people there who built iOS, and it's only 10 years old in terms of release, so they know it really well, and they know the compromises they had to make, and they know how it doesn't interact and does interact with the Mac, and they've got all of that. My gut feeling is you'd be better off not retrofitting iOS, which was never really intended. I mean, you're taking something based on the Mac and then retrofitting it back into being kind of like the Mac. That seems weird versus like, let's build a new OS that can run on phones and can run on big desktop computers and scales. And it's using everything we've learned about this, and it runs on our chips, right?
Yep.
And that seems like it would be...
It makes a lot of sense, because I think what your piece is, you know, adroitly sort of addressed is that a lot of people were going into the tablets, including I think Steve Jobs to a certain extent, thinking that a tablet would essentially kill the computer. It hasn't happened, and it's certainly, you know, the smartphone, if anything, is far more plausible as a computer killer. But even with all that, the laptop form factor has proved that it is not going anywhere. And that's simply by virtue of the fact that you and I and so many other people use keyboards with our tablets. Because, simply put, a hardware keyboard has not been surpassed in software engineering. And having a device... So having a platform that works on a laptop form factor device and a tablet, or possibly a laptop-tablet hybrid of some kind, like a detachable... I don't know.
Sure, whatever.
Something like that is probably in the offing, because I don't think... Despite all the people who say that the iPad, you know, has basically duplicated everything that a laptop does, I don't think that's 100% true. I think a lot of people don't need a laptop, but there are a lot of people who still do need something in that form factor. And so being able to address all of those things makes a lot of sense.
That was my argument with the iOS laptop is when you say it doesn't do everything a laptop does, I feel like we have to start uncoupling shapes. Right? Because like a laptop shape, like a Chromebook is a laptop, but boy, it really doesn't do laptops do, because we are thinking of laptops differently. And like, I would argue that some large percentage, and it doesn't even need to be 50%, some large percentage of people who use laptops do use it because they like the shape of it, even if they don't.
Sure.
And my mom was like this for years until she switched to the iPad. She liked the shape of it. Jamie is like this. She likes the shape of a laptop.
You can still do things with a laptop that you can't do with a tablet physically, right? Like, you can't sit there with a tablet on your lap.
It's all about shape. Exactly right. If you wanted that perpendicular thing, if you want to set it on a countertop, you got to fold back a stand or whatever. It's got a really good keyboard that's that's attached to the screen. Even if you can rotate the keyboard, you know, around back so that it gets out of the way, like it's because I had a few people ask me when I wrote this, like, well, you've already got like a keyboard for your iPad, so why do you need another thing? And the answer is, well, it's not as good as a laptop, because it's not attached. For some people that is enough. But I take your larger point here, which is the real solution is probably not let's evolve iOS just enough to make a laptop and then just enough to make a Surface Studio style desktop. The real answer is probably, can we do a new OS that really has touch natively in it? Because the Mac has never done that. And that is that it can scale all the way up to professional use, but also can run Final Cut properly, but also can be down on a phone. Can we have one base platform for that instead of having to maintain two different app bases with some shared code and two different OS bases with some shared resources? And like, unless, and for me, I guess, for people who are really worried about the Mac, that wouldn't be the Mac, but I feel like in some ways that's a more positive story because it means Apple's trying to do a next generation operating system to serve the needs of what we think of now as Mac users.
Yeah.
And that the distinction there is if they just evolve iOS, the path seems more like the Mac users can continue using the legacy stuff, but it's on the side.
And there's something I think about the inherent elegance of the idea of one operating system that runs across many different devices that appeals. I mean, I hearken back to my time as a developer. Like, my job was building web portals. And we ended up with this thing where, like, we would get a new project, we'd have to start a new portal, so we'd, like, port over some of our old code base, but we'd try to improve on things that we had done the last time and make things more elegant and make them, you know, better. And eventually we started working on essentially our next-gen portal code base, which was the idea that you could, like, totally build a modular portal, like, all through building all the tools so that the people who wanted to deploy it could build it rather than us having to build new ones each time. And essentially this is what, like, your modern CMS blog platforms are designed to do in many ways, is create, like, malleable modular pieces of code. And, like, we were trying to do this, you know, 15 years ago, and it was just me and one other guy. So it was, in the end, it never worked, but the idea was there, right? Like, instead of reinventing the wheel every single time, let's build a new thing that adapts to all of these use cases. And I think that kind of elegance is very tempting for a lot of developers and a lot of software companies. Like you said, why have all these multiple code bases that we have to maintain, which share some elements and don't? And if we want to create a new device like an Apple Watch, we got to scale it back to the basics and then add more stuff on top of it. Why not have something that is more agnostic and can deal with all these different devices? And you can tweak it for the particularities of a device or whatever, but it's not just sort of squeezing a square peg into a round hole.
And the I'll throw in one thing on the fire here too, which is Apple has had such success with the App Store. I'll just point out there's no good path for iOS developers to ship Mac software, and Mac software developers, there's a path, but it's not a great path. And I appreciate that there is work that goes into making an iOS app that runs on the iPad and the various shapes and sizes of iPhone. Like, there are, you know, if you're an iOS developer, you probably have to have a version of your app that works with a 5 and a 6 and a 10 and an iPad Pro 10.5 and an iPad Pro 12.9 and an iPad Pro 9.7. I get it, right?
I'm preventing myself from making an auto layout joke.
But they're all iOS apps, and then there's the Mac, and it's over there, and there's this wall, and the advantage of going to a new platform is in some ways that they would probably be forced to find a way to get that wall to come down. It probably means, like, hey, you can't write Mac apps anymore, but you can write iOS apps or new OS apps that have these features that you're familiar with from the Mac that allow you to do things that feel very much more Mac-like. It also probably means that new OS supports pointing devices and stuff, right? And just as we complain about, like, Mac users about, oh, well, what's the pace of platform development? When I complain about, like, no pointing device support on iOS, this may be one of the reasons, right? It's like, why would we think about pointing devices on iOS? Let's put that in the next gen OS. Like, the next gen OS will support pointing devices. iOS is not going to. Like, we're just not going to go there.
Same thing with Macintosh, right? Like, there.
Exactly.
I've written an article about
why
a
rethink
Mac.
The Mac OS at this late date for touch.
Yeah, it makes sense to it. If you look at the idea of, you know, if you look, this is one of those things where you go back and look at the tea leaves about Tim Cook saying, like, we're not going to make a toaster fridge, right? Like, we see all these other people making touchscreen PCs and we're not going to go that route. And the idea is, well, if you're trying to create something that is not quite a PC and not quite a tablet, then that makes a lot more sense than, like, shoving one into the other.
So I do have that. And again, it may not be true, but I have this little intuition that maybe one of the reasons, and I'm not trying to excuse away the security bug, it's a bad bug, it was dumb, they need to look at why that happened, but I'm just saying more broadly, I do wonder, and I hope, because this would be a great reason for it, I do wonder if a lot of what's happening underneath the surface at Apple is that they are building a next generation something. and that has potentially complicated, slowed the pace of their other operating systems because people are working on that. The fact that it's never been rumored suggests to me that it's, you know, if it is happening, it is happening at a very deep level where
super skunk works.
Yeah, exactly right. But you know, that has happened before. So
indeed.
And then it's not a question of will there be ARM Macs, right? It is
right.
Will
it's
there
the
be ARM
devices, whatever
laptops
these things are.
And desktops and whatever else.
And you hit the nail on the head, 'cause I was just thinking about that as you were, like, right before you said that, was this idea that Apple, we saw today, just as we are recording this, there was a news story that Apple's going to be building its own power management chips. And you basically can, like, tick off, go down the list of all the chips they've got inside their devices. And over the past 3 or 4 years, they've been moving more and more stuff in-house. And that's because they want to control everything, basically, like down to the chips inside the box. And having, you know, a new device makes that much more plausible. If you're building new devices from the ground up on a new platform, having that insanely close marriage between hardware you control and software you control opens up a lot more possibilities. And they're already pretty good in terms of iOS devices, in terms of hardware that they control. But it seems like they're going even deeper. Like every time they come into it's almost like going over doing a review of your hardware and being like, do we control this? No. Could we? Yeah, we could, right? And I think that's an interesting perspective to look at in a future where Apple can build all of its devices ground up with its own hardware and then layer its software on top of it. Makes it much more plausible.
All right, we solved everything, Dan. We did it.
Shut it down.
Okay. All right, thanks to everybody out there for being a Six Color subscriber. We really appreciate it. If you're not a subscriber, if you let your subscription lapse or anything like that, hey, please resubscribe. And it helps us do what we do, which is do Six Colors and post things on the website and do the podcast and do the newsletter and all of that. So thank you, subscribers, for doing that. And we'll be back again. You got the double-sized episode this time. Isn't that nice? Or maybe it's not nice. Maybe you're like those stupid guys. They should keep watching the clock. We'll do that next time. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.